Well, hello, welcome listeners and Patreon subscribers to the 9-8 podcast, the home of everything progressive and underground right here in Australia. My name is Alex Hogg. Every show I'm joined by Mr. Dave Ellis. Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. How you doing? My illustrious friend from the Western Coast.
We'll get to it in a minute while we're laughing in a minute. Before we jump into today's show, a quick reminder to everyone listening that if you aren't subscribed already, please follow or subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening, leave a review and share the show with your prog-minded friends. This greatly helps us reach the expand the reach of the show. Now, why do we sound so different today,
Dave? Well, I think it's because we're both recording in the same room for like the third time in existence. And this happens to be a very vacant room in my very new apartment in Perth.
Hey!
So, hey, there we go. We're both on the western coast now.
Yes.
And I'm so far, I am really, really surprised. I shouldn't say I'm surprised, but I'm really taken aback as to the stuff that is in this city. You walk into a coffee shop and there's band posters everywhere, and it feels like it used to in Sydney with the live music scene.
Good. Can you taste the freedom?
I can. I've had a few freedom drinks since I've been here, once I got out of quarantine, and that was, oh God, that was fun. 14 days ostensibly in a hotel. I nearly murdered my partner, but I didn't. No homicide here, which is good. And now we're sitting in this wonderful little apartment in the middle of the city, so it's good.
Yeah, fantastic. So yeah, stay tuned for more of us to ramble about the West Australian music scene as we get more into it.
Absolutely.
Now, a bit of follow-up from last week. We sort of went off on one with people asking us about the new Dream Theater record. And then since then, we've now received a copy.
Yeah.
So we're going to kick off today's episode with our first impressions. So what did you think of the record?
I thought it was really good. Mm. Surprise, surprise. You know, head of Dream Theatre Fan Club of Australia and New Zealand likes new Dream Theatre record. In related news, water is still wet.
Night follows day. Details of all.
But I really enjoyed it. I will say that there were a couple of moments throughout the album that I was surprised at. I thought there would have been... I was hoping that there would have been a little bit more of a return to form, the more classic kind of Dream Theater kind of stuff in there. But the album itself is extremely polished. It's kind of like a mishmash of, I don't know, like John Petrucci's solo stuff, Jordan Rudess's solo stuff, and Distance Over Time, and A Change of Seasons, like all rammed into one thing. So if you like any of that, go and pre-order.
I don't know if you saw the interview that they put out on their YouTube channel this morning as we're recording.
I did not, actually. I saw it come up and I haven't had time to watch it yet.
They sort of spoke about how A Change of Seasons, they sort of went back to it and tried to figure out, you know, what was there, what was interesting, that sort of thing, and then move forward. And I think there's definitely elements of that.
Absolutely.
My one sentence review for this record is like a classic Dream Theater record. You know, all of the stuff that you would expect is there. Mm. There's some fresh sort of takes on a few different stuff. It's not entirely derivative, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good record. Maybe it's one of these ones that'll grow on me slightly more.
Yeah.
I've only sort of listened to it a couple of times, so maybe it'll grow on me a little bit more than I thought it was. Then, you know, it'll sort of grow on me a bit more, and there'll be parts of it that I think are really, really interesting. And, you know, get more into it. But yeah, so far it's so good.
Yeah, I mean, I was the same. There were certain parts of the album where I went, "This is sick," and there were other parts of the album where I went, they could have done a little better on that, I think.
Like part of it as well, I think, and they openly acknowledged that in that little part one of the interview, which we'll put a link to in the show notes. That they acknowledge that they probably wouldn't have, if the lockdown and situations with touring wasn't like that, they probably wouldn't have gone into the studio so quickly.
Yeah.
They probably would have taken maybe 6 months more to you know, work on some stuff or whatever.
Yeah.
But they were sort of like, well, we don't really know what's happening with touring. So, I mean, they probably don't want to say it out loud, but I suspect there's probably a bit of like the, hey, guys, the money well is running dry. You need to pump out the record.
Well, I know that they built their own studio now.
Yes,
so they've gone down the same sort of route as most of the prog giants have, which is, well, instead of paying Bear Tracks or whomsoever it was, hey, James, it was that, wasn't it? Wasn't it? Yeah, it was, if anyone remembers that video from, I think it was the Awake Tour.
yeah.
But, you know, they've gone and built their own. So that can both be good and bad, I suppose. There's less time pressure there so far as money is concerned, so they're not sort of burning through money per day in a studio.
Oh, yeah.
But in the same way, they kind of are, because they've also built this studio, and fuck knows how much that cost.
I mean,
anyone who's listening to this who has their own studio or has built or owns studio-level equipment, you know how fucking expensive that shit is, and sound treating and everything. It's just, ridiculous.
And then presumably, like, I don't know if they've built it in John's backyard or whatever, but you know, you've got to find the real estate somewhere within on the east coast of America where they all sort of kind of live.
Yeah. And it's probably upstate New York somewhere.
It probably is.
Probably even, up near where Rudess is, actually.
Yeah, possibly, but even still, like, upstate New York is not cheap.
No.
Right? That's not a cheap thing to go and, hey, we're just going to buy a property of whatever size.
Yeah, exactly.
Somewhere out in the, you know, where it's not too noisy or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then turn it into a studio.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it would definitely be something that would be far more, for wanted use of a better term, suited to someone who just has loads and loads and loads and loads of cash. probably not.
Or someone who's like fiercely independent.
Yes.
You know, we all know these guys. You know, the Marillions, the Pendragons, this sort of thing. Making records in the bedroom, essentially.
Yeah.
Or in the front room, right? Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like, I would have thought they would have got onto that a bit earlier. Maybe if the band had started 20 years later and, you know, let's say it was 2017, not 1997, when it all fell over with East West Records or whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe they would have gone, screw it, we're going to go independent, we're going to put the records out ourselves, and we're going to make our own studio sort of thing.
Yeah.
But because
probably
would have
been easier.
Yeah, but because they were still garnering interest from the major labels and still kind of selling loads of records and stuff, they didn't need to worry about such things.
Absolutely. Who knows? I mean, I know that that's basically what happened with Periphery and Co. Because they were all, you know, members of the Seven String Forums back in the day, and they basically invented Gent as we know it. And they basically went, I'm not paying for a studio, fuck that. I mean, to get what, 4 album sales at like 20 cents an album and spend 30 grand to make the album, get fucked.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, and that's why we've got such great music coming out now from independent people on YouTube.
Yeah.
Like, you know, people who are relatively
also
unknown.
As well, you don't need loads and loads of money to get probably 90% of the way there to studio quality, right? It doesn't need to be like high end.
No
one's expecting you to go and spend 40 grand on a valve mic, but you
but
you can get most of the way there with relatively inexpensive gear.
You absolutely can. And particularly nowadays as well, with gear being A, it's affordable, but B, people listen to it on their phones, right?
Yeah.
It's like this whole thing with video production. Right, and it's something that I don't understand. People are big, particularly hip-hop artists and such. If you ever do any videos for hip-hop artists, they do this thing where they go, oh, can you record in 4K? It's like, for fuck, what reason?
Why?
Why do you want, oh, because I want it to be high quality. It's like, no. People but watch it on their phones, you fuckwit.
And also as well, you know? Like, I don't know how it is for you, for where the listeners are in the world, but at least here, you can't watch 4K on a 4G stream. Can't watch it on my Wi-Fi network at home, that's for sure.
No,
so
no.
It's like, you know, unless you're in presumably South Korea or Bulgaria or one of these places with really, really good internet, you know, even Vietnam's got better internet than we do, right?
I was about to say, that's not a high bar to jump over.
It is not a high bar to clear, but, you know, there's not really a lot of point to doing that sort of 4K stuff.
Exactly. Yeah,
you know, I mean, if you make it, if your name's Christopher Nolan and you want to make another movie with the, then yeah, go right ahead, make it in 4K. But for everybody else, I don't think it's entirely necessary.
No, that's the thing with Chris Nolan movies. You've got to learn, you never go opening weekend.
No.
You go like 3 weeks later once they've updated the audio.
Or just wait until it comes out on the Blu-ray and then turn the subtitle track on.
Oh, you can do that. I mean, what was interesting was Interstellar, they actually had 2 versions of it.
Mm.
They had the original soundtrack, which was basically a Hans Zimmer leaning on an organ with people trying to speak over the top of it. And then the other one where they had it adjusted and you could actually hear everything. Hilarious that they included both of those.
There was I forget the YouTube video now, but they were talking about how they do like movie musicals, right?
Yeah.
Where essentially they do all the acting part and then they get the actors in the studio on a soundstage doing all the singing.
Yeah.
Because it works better, you can get the clearer things, right? Yep. And there are a couple of videos where they haven't done that. And it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like, you can tell that it's like, oh, you can't really hear the dialogue, or it kind of sounds a bit crap, whatever. Yep. You know. Yeah.
No, it is interesting. And there's a whole thing as well, if you want to have a look at it, listeners, on audio production and audio props for movies. It's really interesting. If we can find a link to this, there's a couple of YouTube videos about it. I'll find them and I'll put them in the show notes. It's really, really interesting if you're into all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But we have digressed because that never happens.
No, not at all. So the other piece of follow-up that I had is we spoke in the last episode about the as-then-untitled Marillion album.
Ah, yes.
Now it has a title.
Oh,
the
yes.
title, An Hour Before It's Dark.
So Dusk.
Yes, essentially.
Right. Is this going to be one of those albums, Hoggy, like Distance Over Time, where everyone's like, so Velocity? Is this going to just be the Dusk album? Is that... And actually, how many Marillion fans do you think we can piss off by referring to it as the Dusk album?
As the Dusk album. Like, I don't know. I reckon we could get a few. Maybe we should just call it the Dusk record.
Yeah,
I'll start that on some Marillion forums and see how far we can get. Yeah.
It's probably going to be a good album. It's Marillion.
It should be.
Let me back that up. It's going to be a good Marillion album. Because
yes.
Marillion doesn't really release bad albums, but they release Marillion albums, right?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, it should be. So yeah, that now has a title. The only other piece of sort of follow-up / news is we briefly discussed sort of some Neil Morse projects, and he's announced a new project very recently. Neil Morse, Nick DiVigilio, and Ross Jennings is a sort of a trio of sort of... It's sort of been described as built from acoustic guitar playing and containing multiple harmonies. They've got a record coming out early next year. It sounds very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what I go to immediately when someone says acoustic guitar and multiple harmonies, I think of like, you know, Irish...
Yeah,
it's like a folk thing. You know, so that could be really interesting.
It could be. I mean, we all know the sort of interplay between Neil Morse and Nick DiVigilio. They've, of course, played together for years in Spock's Beard, so their voices will work very well together. It'd be interesting to get Ross in there as well and see where that goes. That
absolutely.
Be very interesting.
Yeah, Ross, I think it'd be really, really interesting to hear Ross. And also, I mean, if they have any guest spots on the album as
potentially.
Well.
Potentially.
Which could be very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Not saying we know anything, by the way, because we don't, but just spitballing.
It could be.
You know, if they got some people, for example, like Mike Mills on there, that'd be a hell of an interesting time.
I suspect it'll probably stay inside the Inside Out Music kind of record label circles thing, you know.
Yeah.
If they do that sort of thing. I don't know. I think it's probably just the three of them, I think.
That's the thing I've noticed, actually, speaking of Inside Out and people guesting on albums and such. There's been quite a few tracks that have come up on my music streaming service of late, featuring James LaBrie.
Yeah.
And
he also mentioned he was working on a solo record.
Oh, yes! Was that in the video this morning?
It was.
That's why I haven't... I am so happy about that.
He said as yet untitled, as yet unnamed, don't know, but he's been working on it.
That's really good, because I really enjoyed the LaBrie solo
stuff.
It felt a little bit more like if Dream Theater went a little more... radio rock friendly.
There's definitely more metal. It's more of a, you know, there's the screaming, you know, he does the operatic vocals, and then there's like the screaming vocals, especially on the last one.
Yeah.
So, I always enjoy his solo records. But I think part of the exercise as well is he likes to tell people that he writes music for that as well.
Ah, okay. See, I didn't know
He does. You look at the writing credit, he's got a lot of writing credits for the music, not just lyrics, but obviously music as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Him and Matt Gilliori, I think is how you say his name? I'm not sure.
Okay. Yeah. I know Marcos Fogli's the guitarist on that.
Yeah,
absolute nut.
Yes.
So that'd be really, really cool to see him back on there again.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he's going to be there for this one, but yeah.
Well, I hope so. He's pretty good. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Beyond that, I mean, in Australian music news as well, Terramades have released a new solo single. My apologies, a new single. The name of that currently eludes me, and that's terrible. That's really, really bad. It shouldn't elude me. But this is, in case you're wondering, because I've just moved over to the West Coast, I have none of my editing stuff available here. Pulling back the veil a little bit, as a result. We're kind of flying a little bit, you know, live this time around to try something a little bit different. Modern Living Space was the name of it. Modern Living Space. And it seems pretty cool. It certainly seems much less wishy-washy than the last one.
Yeah, the last one, which went for 26 minutes, and I still can't work out why. It just, I don't know. That was,
No. Also, Cog is in the studio at the moment, tracking some stuff. They released some stuff on Facebook the other day, just some videos of some of the members playing some stuff in the studio, which could be really, really, really interesting. I'm very, very keen, obviously, to hear that. And Carnival have sent fans into a bit of a spin because they changed a picture on their Facebook page. And everyone was just going, "Oh my god, what's happening?
Are they in the studio? Are they doing a record? What are they doing?" You know?
Yeah, exactly. And if you want to hear a little bit of an insight into that, go back and listen to the interview that I did with Hoss. Basically, he said, "Yeah, we're writing, but we don't know when anything's going to be released." So,
well, when was their last record? 2013 or something? Was
Asymmetry
that?
Was 2013.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, so
at this point, they're pulling a Tool.
They're sort of writing, and then they're not writing, and you know, they've probably, I think they've got day jobs now, or some of them do.
I know Hoss does some stuff with managing bands and all that kind of stuff. I know he was recently up in the Northern Territory for Northern Territory Day or whatever it is up there with some band doing some stuff. But beyond that, I mean, I don't know. I mean, they wouldn't surprise me in the current climate.
I was going to say, perhaps Kenny's still running around with Birds of Tokyo a bit more and they're doing some more stuff. And
I know. Well, obviously, Kenny had that issue with the divorce and so on and so forth. So that probably affected a few things as well.
Potentially,
But obviously very, very exciting times. I think a lot of people have been back in the studio over the last little bit. Butterfly Effect are back in the studio as well.
I was going to say, what else is there to do, really? We can't make these all. Unless we just get together. Like, try and keep the band. I imagine, you know, without the touring or something to look forward to as a tour, I imagine it's probably rather difficult to try and keep a band together. You know, got no touring, unless you're working on a record or working on music or something like that. If you're able to, of course, you know, if you're even in a position where you can get 3, 4, 5 people into one room together without breaking the law.
That's right.
And luckily you can do such things in this state.
Yes.
Other states, not so much.
Not so much,
Not so much, there's a bit of a problem.
Particularly my home state of New South Wales, but it'll be interesting, I think, to see what happens after that. I know that there's a big competition being held at the moment by, I think it's TG and whomsoever it is. I think maybe Ticketek and Ticketmaster, I'm not sure. Where it's called Backstage Pass. So if you're fully vaccinated, you can actually go in the draw to win basically backstage passes to every arena gig for the next 12 months. Which is a pretty cool little
You've got Live Nation, Frontier Touring, and Teg are in on that one.
Yeah, I think Teg is Ticketek, I think.
I thought it was that Teg Dainty sort of arrangement, TEG.
Could be, I thought it was Ticketek Entertainment Group, but it very well may be, I'm not sure. A little live follow-up, and we'll find out in about 4 seconds.
Yeah, I was just about to say...
But it most definitely is a really, really interesting way of incentivizing people who want to go out and see music. Go and get yourself vaccinated. I mean, I'm fully vaccinated. My partner's fully vaccinated.
As am I as well, to be fair.
As well, yes. I think your wife is as well.
Yes, that's true.
You know, we're not... I don't know about you, but I get fantastic cell phone reception now. But beyond that, it's not really...
I don't know. There was that bit with Guy Sebastian where he was sort of talking about going and get vaccinated, and then he got railroaded in the comments, and he had to kind of backtrack it. And it's like, okay. I see how it is. You got to try and keep that anti-vax portion of your fan base sweet. Isn't that lovely? You
know? I know there was actually a really funny thing I saw on Facebook the other day on Tina Arena's profile. Yes, I'm a Tina Arena fan. Don't at me. She posted a thing about the Live with the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra show that she did, which was a streamed show.
Yep.
Great show, by the way. Go and watch it if you haven't. Tina Arena is fantastic, and I don't care what anybody says. But of course, our illustrious national leader, Scott Morrison, the prime announcer, jumped on there and said...
Scotty from carpeting.
Yes. And he jumped on and basically went, it was so funny because I looked at this and went, what's he doing on here? Like, you know, it was great. I watched it last weekend with Jen and blah, 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 blah. And that was the same weekend that he used his plane to fly home to Sydney for Father's Day.
Yes, that's right.
And it was stacks on. It was hilarious. It just absolutely got wrecked by the comments. Just people thinking, how tone deaf are you? Fuck me.
Yeah. So. How tone deaf is he? Well, I don't think we've ever plumbed those depths just yet. I mean,
He has hit rock bottom and he's digging with a jackhammer, that boy. But anyway, but there's a lot of interesting stuff coming up, and obviously there's going to be a lot of interesting stuff coming up on this show as well once we get completely back online, once we get to the point where we can actually talk about everything. That'll be obviously very, very interesting.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we're going to Our main topic for this week's episode, we're going to go track by track on the new Lepros record,
yeah.
Aphelion. That was put out on Inside Music on August 27, produced by Chris Edrich. Mm. Now, we're going to sort of go track by track on this. We'll start with the... Now, we sort of spoke already about the opening song, the lead-off single, Running Low.
Yeah.
I've pulled up the lyrics here because there was one particular lyric I wanted to sort of kick things off by talking about. And that was, I wonder... Like, he's talking about, you know, get back up on your throne, left you there all alone, I've been running low. And I wonder whether that's sort of a... I think he sort of said in interviews it's sort of a follow-on from the lyrical stuff that he talked about in the last record, Pitfalls.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where it was about, you know, sort of a low point in his life and dealing with depression and mental illness and all that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
What about you, Dave? What did you think of this song?
I thought it was fantastic. I mean, I said that at the time when we reviewed it. And I said I was, if the entire album was more like this, I would be very happy. I was very, very happy to hear that it basically was.
Yes, indeed.
It was exactly kind of what we thought it was going to be with that lead-off single. And it just, you know, absolutely fantastic. I want to pick you up on Aphelion, the actual term Aphelion. Aphelion is, in astronomy, the point where a planet or a comet or some other body is most distant from the thing that it orbits. So in this particular case, if you're talking about the Earth, it's the point when it is the furthest away, also known as the winter solstice, which is around about the 5th of July. For
22nd of July, I think 22nd, 23rd of July, something like that.
Yeah. I think there's. It may differ every year. I'm not quite sure. In 2021, according to what I've read, it was the 5th of July.
Okay.
And specifically at 3:27 p.m. PDT.
Yeah, right.
Time. So, okay. So yeah, and then there's an antithesis of that as well, which is perihelion.
Yeah.
Which is when it's the nearest to the sun as well. So very interesting idea behind the title of the album as well, where, I mean, you could argue that 2020 was Aphelion for most things because we were just drawn away from everything.
Certainly people in the music industry, I think, is sort of away from the fans, away from the road, away from sort of normality, I guess, if you want to call it like that as well.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, the symphony... the strings that were behind the album as well as the guitars and so on and so forth. I was actually really surprised to hear basically an overdriven Strat tone getting geeky on it across the whole album. I was expecting far heavier kind of sounds out of it, but it just worked brilliantly with everything that was there.
Absolutely.
Overdriven single calls. They can't really do any wrong. But interestingly as well, this is not a concept album. I remember saying at the time, I wonder if it's going to be a concept album because of the strings and the this. It's not. The entire album is basically written apart from each other and in different times and all this kind of stuff. So it wasn't all just like, hey, let's write a concept album. It was, this is the name of the album, let's go with it kind of thing.
Yeah, very much so.
You know, very cool. Very, very, very cool. Apparently it originally was only supposed to be an EP as well.
Yeah, well, there was a couple of other songs on this record. I mean, skipping ahead for a second, there was... On Hold. That was intended to be on the previous record, but it got cut because apparently it was too similar in style to another song on the record, Distant Bells.
Yeah, right.
And that's a fair point. There's some similar things stylistically happening there, and I can understand. Like, you can cut that one or rework it and put it on the next record or whatever. Perhaps that was like, well, we've got this song, and then they sort of wrote some other stuff alongside it, stylistically, lyrically, that sort of thing.
Yeah, maybe.
Possibly.
Maybe. I mean, it's very... I've heard of other bands doing that, so it's certainly not unheard of.
Yeah, well, there's always like some stuff left over. I don't know how it usually goes. You always usually hear about this sort of thing where there's like, oh, we've got something left over from the previous record, or sort of a harp, you know, a song or a musical idea or whatever, and we come back to it or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, I mean, Einar is a phenomenal vocalist, and that's displayed throughout the entire album as
Absolutely,
well.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, the way that the band actually deals with dynamics and just changes throughout the song, every song throughout the whole album is incredible.
Absolutely.
Just amazing.
Yeah. So the next song on the record, Out of Here, what do you think about this one?
Very, very cool. A little bit more sing-along. A little bit more... I don't want to say happy, Because
it's definitely not that.
It's not happy, but it's definitely something you could hum to a little bit more. It's a bit of an earworm, you know. That is until sort of the latter half of the song when it just gets, you know, hey, this is, we're listening to Leprous, that's right.
Yeah.
And that all kicks in. So,
yeah, totally.
You know, but definitely a cool song.
Yeah, you say it's not really a happy one. I mean, when you get to the lyric, you know, you're looking at, you know, I can't accept that I'm lost in what seems to be the new reality. Mm. Every bridge I've crossed reminds me of the time I was free. I can't relate to this at all. Where can I go to find my inner spirit back? I mean, you don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to figure out what that lyric is probably referring to.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. And it's not a... I mean, these guys excel in writing what I refer to as Call of the Void lyrics, right?
Mm.
They're lyrics which are expressive of sort of a almost like darker desires within the human psyche. Mm. You know, whether or not that something is, you know, horrible as something like suicide or what have you, or even just recognizing that, you know what, everyone has shit days every now and then.
Totally.
And it's okay. And that's these guys do that so freaking well. It's just, yeah, amazing. Mm. Absolutely amazing.
Absolutely. So the next song on the record is Silhouette.
My favourite.
Your favourite? Yep. Why is it your favourite?
The lyrics in the chorus.
All right.
The lyrics in the chorus, the silhouette as strong as ever, a ghost of my own making, trapped inside, left to burn.
Mm.
That, I love that. Yeah. I listened to that and went, yeah, that's my type of thing. you know, it's such a great track, but it's also, it's one of the shortest ones.
Yeah.
On the whole album as well.
Just because it's prog doesn't mean it has to be long.
Yes, exactly. You don't have to bloat anything, guys.
No.
Just remember that. and the strings coupled with the bass, which is like a synthesized bass and such, is just fucking badass. Mm. Like, you just go, yeah, cool. Like, it's just, so many moments in this, across this whole album, I was listening to it and going, that's really, like, it's something I would like to see live.
Mm.
And it was a bit squandered on me because I have seen Leprous live.
Yes.
And I liked it, but I was that fucking tired after shooting all day at Progfest. I just went, no, I'm going home.
Part of the thing as well, I think, for me, is that I think it was that for when I think you and I probably saw them on the same tour when they came around in early 20... I don't even remember what year now. 2017, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was like, that was when I just started to get into the band.
Yeah.
So now I've sort of sat with these couple of records and really got into the band. Now I'd quite like to see them play again.
Yeah.
And really get back into them again. Quite like to see them play with an orchestra if they ever get around to it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's a few prog bands I'd really like to see play with a full orchestra.
Oh yeah. Like who have you got on that
I
list?
Know we've heard Dream Theater do it, obviously, with the Score DVD.
Yes.
And the Score, the live Score one.
Yep.
I'd love to see that here. It's never gonna happen.
No,
but
no.
I'd love to see them do like the Opera House in Sydney or something and do, you know, Octavarium or do that whole thing. You
actually
know,
while we're here, while we're talking about Dream Theater Australian tours, we probably should address this very quickly and then keep moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely.
Loads of people have been asking us through the Dream Theater Fan Club Australia New Zealand page about what's happening with the tour, when are they coming to Australia, and the answer we have is we have no idea.
Yeah.
This is like, as I said to a couple of different people in a couple of different places, it's like the promoter has not been answering our emails, all of our contact, like we've been speaking to the band's management. The band's management is saying, oh no, well, we can't really make a decision until we receive advice from the promoter.
Yeah.
We've talked about this before. You can't expect band management to keep tabs on these specific... I mean, they've probably got enough problems trying to keep hands on the specific problems of COVID within America.
Yeah.
Never mind the rest of the world over, you know.
100%.
You know, they've got no idea what's happening in England. They probably don't really know what's happening in Central Europe. You know, they certainly don't know what's happening here in Australia.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe the stuff that they are hearing from Australia comes from Fox News and, you know, we're all supposed to be, you know, like this massive police state.
Yeah.
Giant open-air prison, if you believe certain parts of the internet.
Well, certainly that's how it started. But anyway. But it is difficult. I know they have dates scheduled for Europe. I know they have dates scheduled, obviously, for the United States as well. Yeah. And I think some in Canada as well. I think it's a North American tour.
Yeah.
But as always, until an Asian tour is announced, we ain't getting shit.
Yes, exactly.
So and it's not worth their time.
Exactly. And with what's happening in all... And yeah, again, it's a different problem. It's like, what's happening inside China? Well, no one really knows, you know?
Yeah.
Japan, it's all kicked off again. You know, there were problems, you know, they had the Olympics there and they probably shouldn't have and all the rest of it, you know? So, you know, it's... And, it, you know, some countries are allowing people in if they're vaccinated, some countries aren't, and they're just like, well, we can't. How can you possibly plan anything when all of the different countries... And it's all kicking off in the Philippines and Indonesia again, two of probably their newest, biggest markets that they come and play to
on this side of this hemisphere. That's right.
So if they can't be allowed into play, or they don't know if they're allowed in play because hell, the oven doesn't even know what they want to do, then how can they possibly book anything?
Well, I mean, the reality is that if they come into... I mean, they had dates booked in Perth, right? McGowan's not going to let people...
Did they have a show booked in Perth?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, it was Brisbane, Melbourne, Sydney, and Perth for the last the last leg.
Yeah,
because all the Adelaide people were screaming about it.
Oh yes, that's right. I remember
and
that.
Our argument was, well, you could just go to Sydney because it's an hour flight,
or Melbourne, or Perth, or
Perth is further than the other two, so just deal with it.
Exactly, but
But yeah, I mean, it is certainly difficult to ascertain exactly what's going on there. And as always, once we find something out, we will let you know.
Exactly.
I
know that if you are thinking about this sort of stuff, I know there are some people within the Dream Theater community here in Australia who have successfully managed to get refunds on their tickets.
Yeah.
So if you want to go down that road, like, I don't know, talk to your bank, talk to the promoter. Maybe there's something that can be arranged there if you need the money for whatever, you know, if you're strapped for cash or whatever. Yeah. Right? It has been done. There are people in the community who have done it.
Yeah.
So it can be done if need be.
Yeah.
If you need the money. So talk to the promoter, talk to your bank. Maybe there's something they can sort out between the three of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm certain that there will be something that could be done. But it is something that needs to be obviously addressed by yourself. We can't.
Yeah, there's nothing we can do.
And we don't know anything that's going on beyond what we've been told. So, you know, it's just difficult to deal with that. And we were immensely looking forward to it as well. So we're just as pissed off as everyone else.
The only other thing is like, well, once they do get here, what are we going to get? Who knows?
Exactly. I mean, let's be honest. They've got another album out now.
Yeah.
John's got a new toy. He's got the new 8-string, which is now available to buy, by the way. You can buy it directly from Music Man.
Of course you can.
You know, all the gent lords are all going, oh my god. You know, but are we going to get the entirety of Distance over time? No, we're not.
No.
It's just not going to happen. Yeah. My guess is they're going to probably they'll open with The Alien, obviously, because that's the new one that's around. Yep. They'll probably do Bastille Warrior. They'll do Pale Blue Dot. And
depends whether it's going to be an evening. Well, it depends what they.
It'll be an evening with. It's always an evening with here.
But you know, are we going to get Scenes from Memory all the way through?
I doubt it.
No.
Yeah, I doubt.
Not unless they're able to like do a tour where we're able to do two nights in every city.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they can do the second night to do that sort of stuff.
Which, as I have been saying for ages, if they did the fucking Enmore Theatre in Sydney instead of fucking Horden, they'd be able to do it because it's a smaller capacity, it's less to hire, and it would be better for them.
It's probably to do with agents and promoters' contracts that only got availability with that venue or something. Who knows?
Oh, probably. It's also probably got something to do with the fact that they're like, well, we're only spending one night in that city because we're at the end of the tour.
Yeah, so, potentially.
Yeah, it could also be.
Also, as well, like, trying to do two nights in every city, that's a lot of music to learn.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a lot. You know, potentially, you're asking them to learn three records for a tour.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's a lot.
Yeah, exactly. And have it nailed and nail it every night and so
and
on.
Get all the video production things and have two sets and the whole bit. And it would be an enormous undertaking.
Yeah, it'd be way too much. But but anyway, we're digressing. But
yes.
Please, we're happy to help you with the Dream Theater stuff, but we only know as much as we've...
Yeah, exactly. When it comes to like what's happening with the tours, we have no idea.
Absolutely.
Idea at all. Anyway, back to the record itself. Yes. The next record on the track, All the Moments.
Yes.
What did you think of that one?
Look, it was cool. You know, far less direct. I love a slide guitar as much as anyone else, but I felt like this track was... Whilst it was a typical Lopez track, it was quite strong and so on and so forth. It wasn't my favorite on the album.
Yeah, that's fair.
It felt like one of those tracks where it was like, let's give everyone a breather. It felt like a breather track.
Yeah,
to
sort
me.
Of. You got those three ones that are sort of high intensity at the front, and then they sort of bring it down a little bit. And I mean the chorus. I don't know. It's kind of a bit direct. You know, all the moments are gone, finding it alone, trying to atone. All the moments are gone. Forever is a myth. The presence is the only thing that's real. Again, alluding to, you know, no one really knows what's going on. The sort of sense of the unknown and the sense of what's happening in the world. You know, when are we going to be able to get back to
some normality? Sort of sense of normality.
Normal, whatever. Yeah,
I agree with you. I felt it. I'm not going to say it droned on because that's not the words that I want to use. But no. it was a bit meandering.
Which is
a great thing that they, and they can do that sort of stuff very well, but it wasn't something that I
probably
was...
plays live, I imagine, a bit better. You know, you had all the high intensity stuff, now you bring it back a little bit, you bring the lights in, maybe a little bit of fog machine sort of stuff, and it can sort of build a bit of a mood there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's something that I expect would probably happen live. Like, I feel like this would be a fantastic live album to see.
Yeah.
With the right production.
Yeah. So the next track on the record, Have You Ever? Now, this one, you know, you never really see Leprous get too political, in a way, with their lyrics. However, you get to the chorus and you go, you know, have you ever tried to make me blind with stories that would make me lose my mind?
Yep.
Would it ever help you? Would it ever help? Would it ever help me leave behind what I have lost?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like...
Is that a dig at Fox?
It could be, or, you know, just, you know, whatever's happening over in their part of the world, you know. But I imagine, like, you know, this is just COVID sort of denialist sort of stuff. It's not not purely an American thing or, you know, UK thing or whatever. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
They're in all the communities. Oh, absolutely. We all know, like, we know this, so.
Yeah.
You know, there's probably an element to that.
Yeah, you know. I mean, it's definitely, and again, this is another example of the tracks coming down. Like, this is definitely the softest track on the entire album. You know, it's got the least amount of massive moments throughout the entire album. You know, it's a great... Is it a good track? Yes, it is. I like it better than the one before it.
Yeah.
Just because the other one felt a bit sort of ham-fisted. But this one's a little bit more direct, a little bit less meandery, a little bit less wishy-washy kind of stuff. And I agree with you. I think that the lyrics are quite poignant as well throughout the entire... Well, the lyrics are poignant throughout the entire freaking album, to be honest with you. But, you know, it is good. It is good. You know, I mean, yeah. And then you've got, you know, the next track as well, which is The Silent Revelation.
Yep.
Which is where you get some serious... guitar and drum work.
Yes.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
But it really kicks off very quickly after that. Which is awesome.
Yeah. So sort of something almost like a U-shaped sort of thing, you know, high stuff and then sort of and then it sort of builds at the end.
Absolutely. Yeah. Great chorus in that as well.
Yeah.
You know, just there is still a few more extended sort of sections of, you know, of Einar's vocals and you know I can see that people might be a little bit taken aback by that kind of stuff, a little bit turned off, I suppose.
In what way?
Just because they can meander on a little bit and they can just, you know, people can go, yeah, fucking get on with it, mate. You know what I mean? I'm talking more like prog snobs. You know what I mean?
I
can see why people would get a bit weirded out about it, I suppose.
I like the second verse I particularly liked, you know, it goes, eventually alone, the beast is gone, but I'm trapped in his cage, still absorbed by the rage. Nails are stuck under my skin. Trying to remove them will just be causing more pain. I can understand that. Like, you're in a sort of a place and you know that you need to kind of get up and get moving forward. But it's like, you know, the resistance to do that is sort of like, you know, it's sort of, how does that joke go again? It's sort of like, you know, the blankets of I can't leave now. The blankets have accepted me as one of their own.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Yeah, but that's exactly it. I mean, there's a lot of, I have... family relations with family ties, I should say, with some reasonably high ranking person in the police force back in New South Wales, or ex police force, I should say. I'm not going to mention who it is.
Sure.
But at one point, he was unemployed.
Mm.
When my dad knew him, we grew up with him.
Yeah.
And you know, he said after 6 weeks, you kind of just don't want to go back to work.
Yeah.
You know, and it is that thing. It's that whole, you know, well, I don't really have to. Like, this is a great life, you know, kind of thing.
Totally. So,
You know, and hey, if you can make it work, then all the power to you.
Yeah, exactly. So we move on to the next song on the record, which is the one that we spoke about before, On Hold, intended to be on the last record.
Yep.
But, which they really, apparently they really, really liked, but it wasn't included because it was too similar in style, as we spoke earlier. I mean, what did you think of this one?
On Hold, Yeah, look, again, The entirety of this album is one of those albums where you get through it and then you've sort of got to go and have a bit of a chew and then have a think. And then you come back to it and you need to listen to it again and sort of reanalyze what you've heard.
Yeah.
I mean, was there any particular lyric or anything like that you liked in On Hold or anything that really stuck out to you?
The third verse where he goes, I hold my breath and count to 10. Maybe then it will all go away. Distraction strategies may work, but only for so long.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can get behind that. Yeah. You know, there's that sort of feeling that was like, oh, we just need to learn to live with it.
Yeah,
you've probably heard a politician in your area say that sometime shortly, sometime recently. Oh, we just need to learn to live with it.
Just need to learn to live with it, guys. Yeah. Like it's not going away.
Just need to learn to live with it, Stooge.
That's Stooge. Yeah. Man, fucking. Mm. And what's interesting is that there's that idea of count to 10 in there as well.
Yeah.
Another Scandinavian artist that I absolutely love and I've mentioned on the show before is a lady by the name of Tina Deco.
Yes.
She actually has a song called Count to 10.
Uh-huh.
And the chorus in that goes, I'm going to close my eyes and count to 10. I'm going to close my eyes and when I open them again, everything will make sense to me then. So it's interesting that another Scandinavian artist is also talking about this. I mean, this was quite a few years ago from memory. This was on, 2007, Count to 10. But it is interesting how there is that similarity across the two.
Yeah.
Also, if no one here has heard of Tina Deco, you should go and check her out because she's absolutely fantastic.
Totally. Absolutely.
But yeah, so it's a very, very interesting track and those ideas and those similarities really come through, as always, work.
Absolutely. So we move along to the next song there, Castaway Angels. Uh-huh. What did you think of that one?
Castaway Angels. Interesting song title.
Yeah.
Like, immediately I sort of went, yeah. Ooh.
And I want to know the part where it gets to it in the lyric is like, I want to know if there's an army waiting, and now I want to know where we are. And I know there's a chance we'll be castaway angels, but I want to know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
As if that's sort of like maybe he's worried that they're never going to get back to being a touring musician again. You know,
You're
just going to become this sort of thing that everyone used to think about, and now it's just like a bygone era, sort of a relic for a bygone era sort of thing.
Absolutely. I like that first opening. Those are two lines at the beginning, and I want to know if there's an army waiting. You know, that's a really interesting idea.
Totally.
Particularly when you drop that in with the lyrics from the first stanza as well, where, you know, reaching out for oblivion, hiding here for now, dreaming still about another end, I can't look back anymore.
Yeah.
Never look back again, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's so cool, and then toward the end there's that repeat of, you know, we'll be castaway angels, but I want to know for sure. I know there's a chance we'll be castaway for angels.
I suppose that is probably an element of that every artist worries about. You know, is anyone going to come and look? Is anyone going to come look and see us again?
Absolutely.
I don't imagine, you know, without wanting to sound too dismissive of who are the kids these days and that sort of thing. But, you know, they don't. You know, are they going to come back and see rock music again, or are they all sort of like, yeah, well, no, we've got the. You know, we watch this stuff online now, and you know, we follow the people online, and you know, the sort of celebrities are happening there with with the streaming. And is there a market there for live music so much anymore?
I don't know. I find it really interesting that over the last little while, some of the biggest concerts that have happened have been in games, like in Fortnite or what's that other one? I think it was Fortnite as well. I think Marshmallow played a live set. I think Katy Perry played a live set.
Well,
it's a video game.
It's the same with the e-racing that goes on now. The audiences for that are insane, and it's all, you know, they get the big names from, you know, the actual sort of on circuit racing.
Yeah.
And they do the e-racing and they draw big crowds, and it's like, well, you know, to be fair, this is sort of kind of probably where I imagine motor racing is going anyway. I know this is not a motor racing podcast, but humour me for a moment. It's like, it's going to end up online, right? Yep. I mean, eventually, unless it goes all electric or something, I imagine it's probably all just going to end up online.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to become an online thing because it's better for the environment than travelling around with all the people and all the stuff to different circuits in the world and burn fuel.
Yeah, you absolutely.
Know, either by the burning fuel on the track by racing the cars or burning the fuel in the freight by moving it around from place to place.
Or both.
Yeah, both of those things, yeah. But, you know, absolutely. You could argue that the first one is more damaging than the second. So,
You never know. I mean, we are in a very tumultuous time at the moment. You know, socio-politically, geopolitically, and just culturally as well. I mean, we are seeing I read an article the other day about the successor to the internet. I can't remember what it was called. Someone will probably put it in the notes below and tell me how I'm an idiot, and I can't remember it. But people were saying that the internet is gone. It's superseded. It's all over, right? And it was basically, from what I read, and I may be wrong, but it was basically like VR internetscapes. You know, remember that episode of Futurama where they go into the internet and they're like walking around in the internet and shit? It's like that.
See, the one I'm thinking of is the episode of Black Mirror with the striking vipers.
Yeah.
You know the one I'm talking about?
Yep.
Yeah. Like that sort of thing where, you know, sort of at home having these immersive experiences with other people in different places.
Yeah.
Or even like, what's that thing called? Where, you know, you've got a stationary bicycle and you all get together with your mates on the internet and you go for a ride through wherever.
I can't remember.
I think it's called Peloton or something like that. But
it could be Peloton,
Something like that. But yeah, you get together with your mates and you go riding off and, you know, pretend you're in the French Alps or whatever and, you know, all the different difficulties there and that sort of thing, you know.
Yeah.
It's a virtual setup, you know.
Yeah, and that's... Excuse me. My dad's actually got that.
Oh, yeah.
My dad's looking at getting that. My dad's mate has that.
Yep.
And he really enjoys it, really loves it, doesn't have to leave the comfort of his home. But
And especially in these sorts of, you know, especially in places where lockdowns are happening.
Yeah.
Or you just live in a straight up concrete jungle and, you know, the nearest bit of bushland to you or a place where you can go riding a bike without getting knocked off your bike by a car is miles away. And it's like, well, we can just do this sort of stuff in the house.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it is an interesting concept.
And all of these things, bringing this back around to the lyric, all of these different things are all taking away from potentially what could be a market, I suppose, for live music, you know, going to a club or a pub or whatever to watch live music.
Yeah, and you know
you'll notice it more and more in this town, by the way, because there's more and more cover bands going on.
It's interesting. I was reading a post about that the other day. People were saying, oh, is it interesting that there's a lot of cover bands now in Perth and so on and so forth? And, of course, there was always a war in the comments and people were like, no, you're an idiot. And then other people going, yeah, actually, I have noticed that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's fascinating.
I don't think this is a new thing. I think this has always been around, like
probably
cover bands and original bands and that sort of thing.
But at the moment, I suppose people are less willing to take a risk on a local...
By people, you mean the sort of owners and pluggers and runners of these establishments. Yeah,
well, exactly. And I mean, particularly if you're selling, you know, if you're, say, beer at, you know, $12 a pint or what have you, and you've got, you know, you've got a bloke who's doing... you know, a James Rain tribute act or some shit, and you know that guy's going to get 100 people through who are going to buy 2 pints each.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you're talking...
As opposed to an original artist that, you know, they're probably struggling to sell 40 or 50 tickets.
Absolutely.
Know?
And you know what? I went down to the Frio... Clancy's Fish Pub. Frio the other night, right?
Yep.
Great little spot, by the way. If you haven't been there and you're from Perth, go check it out. It's really cool. There's another one around somewhere as well, but the Fremantle one's pretty cool. And on Monday nights, they have a shanty club. And I have been to shanty clubs many times in Sydney. I quite enjoy it. It's great. There's something about a room full of semi-raucous men all singing, you know, shanty songs and everything. But what's really interesting was they allowed local acts to come up and do some of their songs as well. And I have to say, they were shit. It was really horrible. It was just... nothing was sing-along. They were trying to get the crowd involved, but no one gave a fuck.
Yeah, because if you're trying to do original material... Presumably
it was original material.
Yeah, presumably the whole point of Flick the Sea Shanty is that it's a style and they're all songs that everybody knows. And the whole point is to...
Well, that or they're easy to teach because...
Oh, 80 day, 80 day, 80 day, 80 day.
Exactly, yeah. And it's the whole...
Actually, that's more of an... No, that's the Irish drinking song for who's like this anyway. Forget
it. It doesn't matter. It's roughly the same anyway. It's all about ale and mermaids, so... But it was interesting that was something that guy chose to do, right? And I thought, well, I wonder why that is. And then I read about the, you know, more cover bands taking up spots and all that kind of stuff. And I mean, we saw this in Sydney 5-10 years ago, right?
Yeah. Less and less places for original bands to go
and
play.
And it's fucked. It's
places don't want you to, they'll be, oh no, you've got to bring people and all the rest of it, you know.
And I understand that from a financial model, right?
Yeah.
I get that, but
especially in, I suppose in Sydney, where you're just sort of up against it in everywhere, you know, you've
for
got,
sure.
you know.
Yeah.
People don't want to come out, it's hard to get around in Sydney,
yep.
you've got the lockout laws, you've got all the other problems, and you know, high rents, and you know, you can't do this and you can't do that, and you can't sell this to this person, and whatever, and
Well, I mean, if we're in this particular apartment where we are at the moment, if this was in Sydney, exactly where we are now, this would be $1,500 a week.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's nowhere near that, what we're paying here, so...
Well, even in the, even in the centre of Perth here, you're not getting too much sort of... gigs happening in the centre of Perth. They're certainly happening a little bit further out now.
Yeah, there
you
are
know, places in North Perth, places in Maylands, places
yeah.
in Northbridge
as well.
Well, no, even less so in Northbridge. There's only like one or two clubs left in Northbridge now that do it, that play original music. It's it's mostly all taken up by, you know, restaurants and nightclubs now.
I saw a new metal bar had opened, and there's a new gaming bar as well.
Oh, yeah, the gaming bar.
Yeah,
that's really cool. That's been around for a while,
I'm very keen to go and play some Mario Kart there at some point.
I did see that,
But no, but
I'm
you're
not,
right.
I'm not going to come along to that. It'd be too embarrassing. I'll whip all your asses.
But yeah, I mean, it is certainly interesting. And I mean, I think that, I mean, all the songs kind of tie into each other because of the way that they do that. But the next song, Nighttime Disguise, you know, the actual lyrics seem to really take that concept from the previous one, if indeed it is correct what we're sort of spitballing about, to that next level.
Yeah,
the very opening line, I see no reason to wake up, it is the season to retract.
Yeah.
5-hour daylight passed me by, today I'm not going to try. Falling in and out of sleep, the slope is getting way too steep. Now, this could also just be a comment on the fact of where they live in the world. It's fucking dark 90% of the time.
Exactly. It's winter time, you've only got, you know, it gets dark at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, that sort of thing.
And the sun only got up at 11.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
We laugh in Australian.
Yes, indeed.
But you know, it's interesting then as it goes through further on, you know, my body and my mind are synchronized and paralyzed.
Mm.
And then there's nighttime disguise might arise, nighttime disguise far beyond my sight. So what was interesting about that to me as someone who has actually played in bands for many, many years, you become an entirely different person when you are on stage.
Yes.
Entirely different. You know, more often than not, I've walked off stage and someone's gone to me, oh, that was really cool, that thing you did. And I've gone, sorry, what did I do? Because I can't remember. Like, it's not, you know, you walk off stage and you go, okay, yeah, cool. And then you're a completely different person on the stage as you are off stage. So
you're not even talking about the difference between being, like, performative or anything, like, sort of a performance sort of thing, you know.
No, you're just a completely different,
you're
almost a character on stage.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. It's very interesting. And maybe that's what they're talking about here.
Potentially.
Know.
Or it could just be a reflection on the Swedish winter. You know, on the winter, winter, you know, just that sort of northern Scandinavian winter where it's, you know, 5 hours of sunlight. You just like, I know that they talk about this and it's like seasonal affective disorder or something, I think, where people get a little bit more, you know, they're sort of in a slightly darker place during those winter months when it is cold and dark and wet and miserable and it's snowing and you know you just can't bother going anywhere.
Yeah,
you know, and that affects people in that
if way. Only for the fact that you can't actually open the door because of the snow.
Yes Yeah, you got to dig the car out in the night time so you can then dig the car out in the morning.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
Yeah.
So we move along to the final song on the record, A Prophecy to Trust. It's along the similar sort of lines, I think, you know. When I'm looking for signs, a prophecy to trust, knowing I must be right, But I know that I am lost. What happened to my sight? Shouting out loud to make my intuition stronger. Again, that sort of hanging and waiting for a thing to change, waiting for that, you know, something to, you know, that thing to, you know, maybe return to normal again, like what we've spoken about throughout this whole piece. But yeah,
absolutely.
Well, I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, look, I agree with you. I mean, it's no secret that this entire album and the previous one, Pitfalls, as you mentioned at the top of this. Is kind of stems from Einar's personal struggles with anxiety, depression, and so on and so forth. So it's no secret that the songs are kind of very in a loose way they're interlinked, I suppose.
Absolutely.
But it is, I mean, the album itself as a whole is exceedingly good. It's just brilliant. And I mean, this song is no different. It's no slouch like any of the other songs.
Yeah.
Yes, there are probably some acquired tastes in it, and yes, it requires more than a cursory listen in the office or
totally, whatever.
If you have any long commutes, I would recommend putting headphones on and just listening to it.
Yeah.
And don't fiddle with your phone. Don't do your fucking Duolingo while you're doing it. Just listen to it, right?
Yes,
and actually absorb everything that's going on. Or
I think there's definitely something to be said for that sort of album experience of having the physical product and reading the lyrics and looking at the artwork and all that sort of stuff. And I think this record definitely lends itself to that.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And this is part of my argument for vinyl as a lover of vinyl myself, although my vinyl collection is back in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not transporting that. I love that experience. I love that I have the album and I can sit there and stare at the album and read the lyrics and do all that kind of stuff. Is Spotify or, you know, Bandcamp or any of that kind of stuff infinitely easier? Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Way easier just to go tap, cool, thanks very much.
Yeah.
You know, smash your phone on the makeshift table while you're at it. you know, yes, but there is also something about being anchored in place because you can't leave that room.
True, yes.
Because that's happening, you know, and I'm a little envious of the kids who were in the 70s and they had to put their headphones on because their parents were like, you're not playing that Pink Floyd shit again, are you?
Yes,
you
know, indeed.
Sounding like the Monty Python crew for some reason.
Yeah, or you can't play too loud or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know, the whole vinyl thing, I don't know. Yeah, the novelty of having to get up and change the side of the record every 20 minutes wore off very quickly.
Oh, absolutely, it does. It absolutely does. But
there's
something nice about being anchored in place and having to actually sit there and appreciate it. I think, unfortunately, and this is the grey hairs probably talking now, but because we've got everything so easily accessible and everything, I mean, you have millions and millions and millions and millions of albums at our fingertips and we can listen to whatever we want, wherever we want, whenever we want to, it sort of becomes a bit of an ancillary.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, yeah, well, I think there's been many artists have pontificated about this. It's like music isn't sort of the focal thing anymore. It's sort of a peripheral thing. You know, music is everywhere. You know, it's in the car, it's in the shops, it's in the workplace, it's here, it's everywhere. You know, it's just not something that is a focal point for people anymore.
Yeah,
absolutely. And there's probably some truth to that rather than just sort of old man whinging.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. Absolutely, which we are both adept at.
So, oh, totally. 100%, you know. So overall, we give this record a pretty solid thumbs up. You know,
two thumbs up from me.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely.
And I still need to go back and listen to it again.
Oh, like, same.
I know this shit that I've missed.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I know. We've kind of breezed through this one rather quickly here.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot more in this record to pick up on. You know,
the
interplay between the lyric and the melody and the strings and everything behind it is fantastic. Yeah,
absolutely. Einar and the boys do an exceedingly good job every single time they release something.
Totally.
And this is definitely going to be up there in my albums of the year. Like, definitely.
Oh, 100%.
Definitely. Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, that brings us to the end of the album review. So, we will quickly walk through the records that we gave each other last time around.
Our album reviews.
Yes,
yes.
Indeed. So, the record that I gave to you was a self-titled EP by a local band here in Perth, Church Group.
Yeah.
What did you think?
It was cool.
Yeah.
I remember listening to the first track and thinking, oh yes, Doctor Who. and it had that kind of synthy lo-fi thing going on, but then it had that rock edge to it as well, indie rock edge kind of thing.
Yep.
I thought it was really interesting. Would I necessarily go and see them live? I don't know, because I'm not sure whether or not it would translate into a live sort of
it does mostly thing. It does mostly because it's just you know, it's a sort of collection of loop pedals and some keyboards, right? It's not not talking about, you know, mostly, you know, drum machines and loops and that sort of thing, so it translates pretty well live. It worked pretty well when we saw them live. Kind of like you said, very lo-fi sort of dark wave, kind of low energy on stage sort of stuff. But it was a very, very interesting, that is definitely not something I've, you know, it'd be really easy for someone to do like a really easy sort of Human League, Duran Duran sort of cover of this sort of stuff, and it would just sound like a pastiche of that sort of stuff. But I think this one just sort of drifted it slightly into a different place.
Yeah, and that's what I was I was pretty happy with the result of what they'd done.
Mm.
Just because it felt like they were actually making something reasonably new.
Mm.
Have I heard this sort of thing before? Yeah, probably somewhere. I don't know. But it was unique enough that you went, okay, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know? I would absolutely listen to the album again. Yeah, thumbs up from me.
Absolutely. Totally. All right.
Now, Hoggy, I gave you an album as well, obviously as is normal. I gave you Michael Lepage's Are You There? And I'm sorry, I don't know if that's how you say Lepage.
Michael Lepage. I think it's... Polish names are always... Polish names are always a bit tricky. Now, obviously, those of you who are not aware, Michael is obviously the keyboard player for Riverside. Now, this is a fabulous record. Everyone should go out and listen to it. Like, it's very influenced by Vangelis.
Yeah.
There's bits of it that sound like it should be on like a Blade Runner soundtrack.
Uh-huh.
There's a moody atmosphere to this record, mostly achieved by being entirely instrumental. Like, you know, we just spoke at length here about a moody sort of atmosphere generated with the interplay between the lyrics and the melodies and that sort of thing. But this is more or less entirely instrumental.
Yeah.
I'm definitely coming back to this record again. There's a lot here to dig into. It's a fantastic, fantastic record.
Yeah.
Probably one that's going to sit somewhere near the top of my list, I think.
It was really funny you mentioned Vangelis because when I first heard the album, and as everyone knows, I'm curating a big every single releases blogist every year. I do that. And I just had it playing. I had that playing on in the background, and that came on, and I went, oh, has Vangelis released a new album this year? And I looked at it and went, oh, okay, I know what Hoggy's getting next time.
Fair enough. Well picked.
It was really, really cool. So what have you got for me?
So for next time around, I have a record by a UK-based artist called Nat Burchell. Okay. The record is called Ancient Africa. Check it out, tell me what you think.
Absolutely.
So what have you got for me?
I've got an album by a band called Delane. It's called Apocalypse and Chill. It was released last year. Check it out.
Apocalypse and Chill.
Mm.
Not like Netflix and Chill. Although Netflix is sort of like the apocalypse in a way.
Yeah, to an extent. I mean, yeah, well, essentially, basically for Blockbuster it was.
Indeed.
Now, I do want to mention on here as well, hopefully by the next time we do the recording, we should be back to our normal sounds and so on and so forth. But thank you guys for listening to us for just talk for an hour.
Indeed.
With bumping microphones and everything like that. It's been an absolute blast. Now, as always, if you can't get enough of us and you want to hear us crap on some more about something, by all means, check out our Patreon. Jump on there. We do an after show on that. We'll be recording that right after this, actually, where we're going to be doing a whole bunch of talking about Triple J's recent lambasting by one of our favorite YouTubers, Friendly Geordie. So,
indeed.
Yeah, if you want to check that one out, absolutely come across and check that one out.
Indeed. So if you want to find the show notes for this week's episode, you can find them at the98podcast.fireside.fm/76.
Wow, 76.
If you want to find us at Twitter, you can find us at 98FM on Twitter. You can find our Facebook page at facebook.com/98FM as well. But until next time, my name is Alex Hogg.
My name is David Ellis.
Thank you all very much. We'll see you next time.